And now, Jalen and Jacoby.
We're the Pop Patrol. Head to the dirt.
Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Worry about my posse getting jumped. Cause if we ever do, yo TB, pop the trunk.
Cause we make a pop the trunk and hit the switch.
Now act stupid, I'll pop the trunk. Now give me your boom, boom.
He is Jalen Anthony Rose.
What up, though?
I'm David Jacoby.
And on the cool check-in. Center stage on the mic.
And we putting it on wax. It's the new style.
We're Jalen Jacoby. What do?
We give the people what they want.
Huge show today. We have Jalen Rose's reaction to the controversy, the travesty, the tragic experience that was the Packers-Lions game last night. And we have Hall of Famer Dave Winfield coming by the show. But right now, we have our colleague, NBA veteran, twin dad, Matt Barnes in the studio.
Yes, how you doing, fellas?
Man, this is a big time for you right now, Mr. Barnes.
Yeah, making a few moves, man. Transitioning from, you know, my career to the next step, and it's been enjoyable.
Well, tell us about it. You know, I've heard that you're not only on this show, you're not only working on The Jump and working with ESPN, you've got a couple other properties you're working with.
Yeah, I signed a deal with ESPN, excited about that. Also launched my podcast this week with Showtime, All the Smoke, with my former teammate, Steven Jackson.
Of course we know Steven Jackson.
In the process of, my guy, no doubt, shout out. And then in the process of finalizing a deal with Complex to host a show for them. So just, you know, spreading my wings.
So wait. You got platforms. ESPN, Showtime, and Complex.
Yes.
So you got the big Disney network. You know what I mean? That national big time, lots of eyeballs media. Yeah. You got the Showtime, that premier cable network, and then the Tastemaker Digital Network Complex.
Right. No,
good for you. Who's your manager?
I got a lot of kids. I got a lot of kids, man. I got to feed these mouths.
I got another job for you, my brother.
What's that?
L.A. Sparks GM. What do you think?
Okay.
Yeah, that's funny. So let me give you the backstory real quick on that. So everything is going down, and I have a UCLA group chat, and one of my homies said, Matt, if you tweeted out right now that you were going to go for the GM of the Sparks job, people would lose their mind.
And absolutely.
I was like, all right, let's see. And I tweeted it, and people started going crazy. So it was pretty funny.
I thought me and Jalen had a tense relationship. I can only imagine what that would be like.
No, but me and him are cool now. You know what I mean? He's we're in each other's lives. You know, we share a family, so to speak. So we're cool. So it was really just a funny kind of take, but everyone enjoyed it.
Isn't it kind of funny how that has followed you two around longer than I expected it to?
Well, I mean, you think that, and then the Kobe ball fake that happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll post a picture of my newborn son and someone will say, Kobe didn't flinch. I'm like, yeah, I know. You know what I mean? But then, that and
Jalen can't relate. Jalen can't relate.
Nope. Because I flinched.
Well, so 81 Matt, is Paul J.
So, Matt, I want to ask you something, and this would be really appropriate for our audience. You alluded to a broken family situation. I grew up, I never met my dad. My goal was to not have kids and not be with their mom. But that ended up happening. I had two kids. I was never married to their mom. And it had a lot of turbulence in my life because I needed to repair the relationship with my daughters.
Right.
And it just really started getting fixed recently over the last maybe 3 or 5 years. So can you talk to our audience who come from single parent homes, from broken families, from a parental standpoint and a child standpoint, how you can overcome all of the feelings that go into those relationships and still behave with harmony?
It's tough, man. I think co-parenting is one of the single toughest jobs on the planet. When both parents aren't on the same page, but at the same time, you still have children that you brought into this world. You know, I came from a somewhat broken, abused, drug-filled childhood. And, my goal was to be the best father I possibly could. You know, ideally, you always want to say that you're going to, you know, be with the woman you have children with. But the way the world works today doesn't work that way. So my situation was I split in 2014, and my main goal was not to allow that to happen. You know, no matter what, I was going to be in my kid's life. Obviously, I had some obstacles and roadblocks between there. But I just got to a point where, you know, obviously, the situation with my ex and I didn't work, but the most important thing that I always kept in mind were my kids, you know, and they were at a young age to where they still needed to be shaped and guided. So I wasn't going to allow the disruption between their mother and I to affect our relationship. You know, so it's actually why I retired early. You know, I had signed a 3-year deal the year I ended up retiring with Golden State. And, you know, we're lucky enough to win the championship, but I just felt there was becoming a disconnect because I wasn't getting a chance to see my kids as much as I wanted to, and I was being kept from them. So, you know, I jumped out of the game and really into their lives on a full-time basis, you know, getting full custody of them last year, coaching them in football and basketball, and really just trying to mend the relationship as much as I can with their mom from a standpoint, realizing that we're always going to be in each other's lives because of our children, you know, so let's keep them first and keep their needs first and try to co-parent the best we can. But like I said, that's a lot easier said than done.
That's really well put. And I'm so glad you're here because, Matt, we have a segment on this show where NBA athletes and professional athletes take people like me, regular folks, behind the curtain. Our colleague Baxter Holmes wrote a very interesting piece about the relationship between NBA players and sleep. And I think one of the most sort of jarring statements was from Sixers Tobias Harris. Here's what Tobias told Mr. Holmes. He said, "You ask anybody in the room, the thing I talk about is sleep. I think in a couple years, sleep deprivation will be an issue that's talked about like the NFL with concussions." Now, I just happen to be with two people that spent a lot of time in the National Basketball Association living that lifestyle. How much of a problem do you think sleep deprivation is for NBA players, Matt Barnes?
I think it's a huge problem. I think it's something that has been, that's gone unaddressed, and people don't understand. You know, you're complaining about your travel and it's first class. It's not about the travel. It's the fact that you're going into different time zones. You can play a double overtime game and have a back to back and fly into another city, not get there till 2 in the morning, not go to sleep till 4 or 5. You know, I had things that helped me sleep, but we'll speak on that later. And then get up and perform the next day. All the smoke, you know. But expect to get up and perform the next day. There's no excuses. So, I mean, it is really hard to get quality sleep with the rigorous schedule and travel schedule that we have. So I completely understand where he's coming from.
Jalen, what do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, our day is upside down. Yeah. So in, you think about it, during the day, you're preparing to play a game that doesn't happen until 7 or 8 p.m. So the game ends 10 or 11 p.m. You do your media obligations. You're taking a shower. You're actually having dinner when you're not traveling at midnight. That's when your night starts in a lot of cases. And to be frankly honest with you, I didn't realize I had it until I realized that I almost felt like I couldn't go to sleep alone. Yeah, I said it. I felt like I'm up. So all of a sudden I'm on the phone, 310-323, whatever area code I'm in. And I didn't realize because I had sleep deprivation.
Okay, Jalen.
You might have had something else, too, but we'll leave that for
another. It seems like you two are hinting at a lot of things that helped you with sleep deprivation, but you're afraid to say them out loud. So, I mean, here's what I would ask you two for someone like me is, you know, again, I never played professional sports at all. I'm looking at your lifestyle. You're making millions of dollars. You're flying first-class accommodations like I'm flying in coach, and then you check into a luxury hotel, and then you have the shoot around in the morning, and then NBA players also famously take a nap. So how would you explain to someone like me who looks at that schedule and says, you know what, it's not that bad?
You just don't see. You don't see the post game. The post game, getting out after a game is usually a hassle in itself. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how far the airport is from where we play in, mechanical problems, how far you have to fly, do you play the next day? There's just so many things I think that people don't think about. I remember this one time when I was married, I had my wife travel with me, and she was blown away how we would get into a city at 2 a.m. and then try to go to sleep and have to play a game the next day. Even though we do get a chance to take a nap, you gotta, it's hard just to go to sleep sometimes. You're revved up from either a game or from practice or a shoot around. It's hard to get your body to go to sleep during the middle of the day, even though we need it for the game at that night. So it's just, it's a different schedule, and you know your body is all about a routine and mechanics and all a certain type of schedule, and it's really hard to get a sufficient schedule with the travel there is.
I really appreciate you two taking me behind the curtain and our audience behind the curtain on that one. It makes a lot more sense to me now, but there's something I want you two to make sense of, which is much more difficult. The Western Conference and the National Basketball Association. Now, Matt, you've played for the Clippers. You've played for the Lakers. You've also played for the Warriors, you know, the Kings and some other Western Conference teams. But here's my question. Which team right now, do you think is best suited for a long run to get to the NBA Finals in the Western Conference?
I think it's the Clippers. Last year they had a team that bought in. They had no egos, no real superstars driving them. Great coach, great foundation and ownership and management. And then you add two selfless superstars and guys that play both ways. Obviously, Paul's shoulder needs a little bit more rest, but I think you add those two into equation with the team that's already bought in and hungry. I think it's the Clippers West to lose.
Jalen?
And the depth in the West is awesome this year. We're going to talk a lot about what's happening at the Staples Center, but Utah is going to be in the conversation. Denver was surprising last year. But I want to ask you about the team that you won a championship with. I think people are sleeping on the Golden State Warriors. I think they're going to fall between 6 and 8 and be that squad that nobody wants to play in the first round.
I just said that on Get Up. I think for the first time in 5 years, there's no pressure on them. There's no expectations, and people are actually doubting them. Steph is having a chance. I see a little pep in his step. Everyone had to take a step back with KD, including KD. Now with KD gone, Klay gone, Steph is going to really get to show everyone that he can do James Harden-ish things. When I say that, I mean put those kind of godly numbers up, because he doesn't have to pass to two other great shooters. I think obviously adding D'Angelo Russell, we all know what Draymond can do. This is a team that's definitely being slept on, and I completely agree with you. I think they're going to be in that 5-8 range, and no one's going to want to play them in the first round.
They will be in the 5-8 range. No one will want to play them. Remember where you heard this first. I'm predicting there'll be some very strategic load management to try to avoid the Warriors.
To
those last few games of the season.
No,
you'll see some very strategic load management. Now, of course, we're covering the Eastern Conference as well. To me, in my mind, it seems more of a two-horse race, more of a traditional conference than we've seen recently between the Sixers and the Bucks. How do you see the Eastern Conference, Matt?
I think, like you said, it's a two-horse race. I really like Philly. Antetokounmpo was the MVP. I think losing Brogdon is going to be a major hit. But I just like the talent of Philly. But my question with them is maturity and who's going to be there down the stretch clutch player. I love what, Ben Simmons has been able to play this summer and really get confidence in himself and his game. So I think he's going to have a big year. But who's going to be their player down the stretch?
Matt, come playoff time, even great players' weaknesses get exposed. So I'm interested in your opinion about Giannis and Ben Simmons. Will their lack of jump shots ultimately stop their teams from winning the championship?
Well, I think we saw that last year, with Giannis. And to me, he won MVP, but he's still one of the – it's weird to say that an MVP still has more to prove, and I think he knows he has more to prove. I think we've been saying that, so you see that chip on his shoulder early in the preseason. But I think it's very important, just the way teams play and they're able to sag off and clog the middle up. And, if you can't really shoot in this game, it hinders you. No, we're not saying they have to be great knockdown, dead-eye three-point shooters, but they have to be able to be someone that is honored on the offensive end when they don't have the ball. You can't just sag all the way in the paint.
I mean, another player that sort of exploded onto the league that doesn't necessarily have the best touch from range is Zion Williamson. And what we've seen from him so early has been so impressive. He's doing the same thing he did at Duke in the NBA. But I'm a little concerned about this. Do you think that the league will sort of figure Giannis out? Do you think over time, as they see him two or three times, they'll start to figure Zion out?
You can try to figure him out, but stopping him is a whole other thing. We saw him go through Rudy Gobert, who's a two-time defensive player, like he was an eighth grader. He took it right to his chest, finished through him, threw one off the rim, and went up and dunked it back. So I'm excited for this kid. I've been a big fan of this kid. I think the team around him is great mix of veterans and role players and younger players, great coaching staff. So I think the fact that just his energy alone, the way he plays his athleticism, is going to keep him in that 16 to 20 point range. It's going to give him some time to develop his mid-range and his three-point shot.
Matt, I've heard players that played a long time, like Robert Parrish comes to mind and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who felt like their marijuana use helped with their longevity. We see a lot of states legalize it, and some people try to act like it's a bad thing or whatever, but now the exposure to marijuana is wide open for us to discuss. How much did you smoke, and do you feel like players today are enabled by the ability to be able to smoke while they perform?
I was someone that started smoking at 14, to escape the childhood I lived in through high school, through college, through the NBA. And I think it definitely helped with my recovery, my focus, my just overall well-being. And it's unfortunate that it's something that there has to be something to it. If there's so many players doing it, we continue to be penalized and suspended and some guys losing their career. But on the flip side, they're pumping us full of opioids and Toradol and anything you can imagine to get us back on these fields. But then they want to penalize us for doing something that's natural, that helps us, that sits us down in the house and relaxes us. I've always found it strange, but I'm working with UCLA on a cannabis research program, hoping through those studies we can bring those to the NFL and the NBA and help change regulations.
While you were in the NBA, how would you avoid testing positive?
Oh, you guys want all my secrets, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, I failed twice. You know, you get three strikes in the NBA. I was on like 2.75 when I decided to step away. But really just most of the part, you know, you can't really overindulge. You know, I used it as needed, but, you know, also ate clean, stayed in the steam room and drank a lot of water just to kind of continue to flush my body out. A couple other things that I can't really say right now because I don't want to, you know, get anyone that's still playing, you know, looked at a little differently. But those were the main things I did to kind of be able to maintain the lifestyle I needed to, because I wasn't someone that could take opioids. Opioids used to destroy my stomach. Even a simple Vicodin would give me a stomach ache. So I was someone that only sat out when I was suspended. I played through everything, and cannabis was a big reason for that.
Matt Barnes, thank you so much for coming through. Look forward to you showing up on our waves at ESPN, on Showtime, and on the Complex Network, Digital Network. Thank you so much for coming by. You're welcome to come back anytime.
Thank you, fellas. I appreciate it.
Shout out.
Now, we're going to give the people what they want. If you're carrying revolving debt, that means you're not paying off your credit card every month and could be paying thousands in interest every year that you really don't have to. With LendingClub, you can consolidate your debt and pay off credit cards with one fixed monthly payment. Since 2007, LendingClub has helped millions of people regain control of their finances with affordable, fixed-rate personal loans. That means no trips to a bank, no high-interest credit cards. Just go to LendingClub.com, tell them a little bit about yourself, how much you want to borrow, pick the terms that are right for you, and if you're approved, your loan is automatically deposited into your bank account, and get this, as little as just a few days. LendingClub is the number one peer-to-peer lending platform with over $35 billion in loans issued. Go to LendingClub.com/J&J. You can check your rate in minutes and borrow up to $40,000. That is LendingClub.com/J&J. LendingClub.com/J&J. All loans made by WebBank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Jalen Rose did not get what he wanted from Monday Night Football. We all know what happened in Wisconsin by now. And a final second kick, the Packers beat the Lions. But all the discussion is about what? The referees and some bad calls that went against Detroit, especially these two on Trey Flowers. Some illegal hands to the head and neck area were called. And the replay showed those hands were not on the head or the neck area. These were two huge calls in the game that led to scores by the Packers and eventually the Packers win. Now, after the game, Trey Flowers himself discussed the calls. Let's listen to Trey.
They saw something different than what actually happened. And they called what they thought they saw. So, yeah. I actually changed the position of my hand because it was to the chest initially, which is right here. I was doing it all game. I didn't know that was a flag to the chest, so I actually changed it to right here. And he called it again. Yeah.
I love how you finished that. Yeah. Jalen, you're a huge Lions fan. What do you think about those calls?
So, I'm conflicted because okay. I appreciate that my hometown team is now starting to get some national respect for playing really well in big games.
Mm-hmm.
Moral victory against the Kansas City Chiefs, held Patrick Mahomes without a touchdown pass. I was hoping that Monday night game was going to be a breakthrough where we actually not only performed well, but won the game. Mm-hmm. And yes, those couple of calls, when you have a former MVP like Aaron Rodgers and you continue to extend drives, at some point it's going to come back to haunt you. And I really felt bad for Trey Flowers and Coleman and Big Play Slay because they was ballers. Okay. And so on the first penalty that they called on Flowers, the offensive lineman actually had his hands to Flowers' face.
Yeah.
So, number one, which would have clearly, you know, changed the dynamics of the drive. And then has he acknowledged, not only was he doing it all game, most offensive and defensive linemen are doing it all game. And so I was really disappointed by the officiating. I do believe extending those drives ultimately cost us the game.
So I agree with you on a few things. I was disappointed with the officiating, and I do believe those extending those drives cost the Lions the game. But I mean, in a weird way, I'm not disappointed with the referees. When you watch the replays, you see that his hand is not on his head or neck. But in real speed, when you're standing there and you see Bakari's head go all the way back like this and you throw the flag, I can understand why you throw the flag. I understand why you throw the flag. The problem is the system. There needs to be some sort of checks and balances in place, some sort of 5-10 second review that reviews these type of calls, extra challenges, something that fixes this. Because in real speed, to the naked eye, when things are happening that fast, I understand why they called the flags, but you can quickly see on replay, how long did it take the announcers to tell you? How long did Booker McFarland tell you that that was actually not hands to the face? 5 seconds? 10 seconds? They should change the system so whether it's only in the fourth quarter or only on big plays or some sort of special challenge flag, the rules, the system needs to change. I don't necessarily blame the actual human being that threw the flag.
Well, I disagree with you. Here's why. Because you're right. You and I represent the naked eye. But these are paid professionals that should know the difference between hands to the face and hands to the top of a shoulder pad or to the neck. Let me give you a different example from a different sport that found a way to clean this up. In basketball, players drive to the basket, used to flop their head really back so that the officials would call that. Mm-hmm. At some point, the refs was like, oh, we're going to stop calling that. And you know what players stopped doing? Flopping like that. And so when you're an official, I don't need 15,000 replays for them to get it right. Initially, you got to swallow the whistle, allow the players to decide the game. That's what you have to do. Your job is to protect the players and police, in theory, what's happening out on the field. Not decide the game, extend drives for Aaron Rodgers that ultimately cost my hometown team the game.
Well, we knew it was going to happen at some point, and it happened last night. After all the controversy about the Daryl Morey tweet and the relationship between China and the NBA, we all were kind of waiting for LeBron James to say something, and he did yesterday. Let's listen to King James.
We all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe... I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke, and so many people could have been harmed, not only financially but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do. Even though yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be. A lot of negative that comes with that too.
There was a bit of fallout from those comments, so LeBron James took to Twitter later and said this: let me clear up the confusion. I do not believe there's any consideration for the consequences and ramifications of the tweet. I'm not discussing the substance. Others can talk about that. He went on to say, my team in this league just went through a difficult week. I think people need to understand what a tweet or statement can do to others, and I believe nobody stopped and considered what would happen. Could have waited a week to send it. Now, Jalen, there's a lot going on here, and I will say that this was not exactly LeBron James' finest moment in front of a microphone or behind his Twitter fingers. Jalen, what is your response to Mr. James' statement and his follow-up tweets?
LeBron James has been one of the more terrific athlete ambassadors that professional sports has seen. But he's not perfect nor flawless. And in that sound, it kind of got... In that sound, it got exposed because a couple of words that he used is why the firestorm ultimately happened, which is why somebody that's so very articulate in front of a microphone and expressing themselves still had to go to Twitter to clear something up. Just think about that. Normally that happens in reverse. You tweet something, then explain it. Not explain, and then tweet about it. And here's what it was. He initially talked about the freedom of expression, but then he acknowledged that it's at a cost. He also said that there could be ramifications. And the first example he used was financially. So yep. The reality of it is this. Freedom of speech, as he said, his words, does have a cost. And in this case, it's doing business with China.
It's interesting because he said there's there can be negative ramifications, but really what it's more like with freedom of speech comes a responsibility. And when we use the word uneducated, like he felt Dale Murray was uneducated about these things. But one thing I always say is everyone's a hero in their own movie. And I felt like LeBron in this moment was a little too subjective in his view of what happened. He was a little too seeing it through his own prism and not really understanding holistically all of the implications of the tweet and the implications of the conflict between Hong Kong and China. He was basically saying, this affected my life and the people that were with me and my teammates and the NBA that were over there in China. This could have waited a week. Whereas, like, we all know that if you're really fighting for freedom and you're really fighting for justice, waiting a week or not waiting a week is not going to change the ultimate outcome. Do you think that could be true?
Well said. And also, it's not fair to call Daryl uneducated on a topic because two words later, you say you didn't speak on it because you didn't feel you had the knowledge of the topic. So that's a contradiction in itself. And the reality of it is, he said it, his words. There is a cost for what you tweet. There could be negative ramifications. And like you just said, that's doing business with China. He wants to make sure that he doesn't do anything to interrupt that relationship.
He's just one of 450 players in the NBA. But we always look to him to give us the answers. We always look for him to be perfect, and it's almost unfair.
Yeah.
Moving on to baseball that happened last night. Me and Jalen were on the football game, but during commercials, I was checking on the baseball game, hoping I could get some drama like we had in Game 2 between the Astros and Yankees. There was no drama. It was a dominant performance from that man right there, Strasburg, and the Nats, who went on to absolutely wax the Cardinals. Is there any hope for the Cardinals to come back and make this a series?
No hope to make this a series. And we talked about this on yesterday's show. Ace pitching at this time of year trumps all great hitting. I remember when the Arizona Diamondbacks won the World Series and they had Schilling and Randy Johnson. And it seemed like they basically pitched every game throughout their title run. This pitching staff has what it takes to do that. So does the Astros. That's why it's going to be interesting to see if the big bats from the Yankees in that series can overcome that great pitching. But in this series with a 3-0 lead, it's going to be over for the Cards.
Oh, it's over for the Cardinals. We have a Hall of Famer in the studio, Dave Winfield, right here.
Bringing the show, two things that it never has, class and maturity. Welcome, my brother.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for coming by, especially coming by in the middle of a Yankees postseason series. Obviously, you spent a lot of time playing in the Bronx. I know you saw what happened in Game 2 in the 11th inning with Correa's walk-off home run. Did the Yankees really, really blow an opportunity to come home to the Bronx up 2-0?
No.
Okay.
two extraordinarily good teams, and no one's going to steamroll the other team. And there's going to be known people and unknown people that are going to make the difference in this series. So I'm going tonight. You know, I'm in the city.
All right.
I might as well check it out.
Okay.
And, good competition. Great series.
Good. Well, they're facing Gerrit Cole. And I just want you to take a look at some of the numbers that Gerrit Cole has put up because he's been absolutely dominant this postseason. You look at that, first in ERA, second in WHIP, first in strikeouts per nine innings, second in OPS. How can the Yankees, and you know, you were a great hitter, put you in the Hall of Fame. How do the Yankees approach a dominant pitcher like this?
You know, I don't know if they're going to be able to change their style for this particular pitcher at this particular time. Gerrit Cole, look, he's doing some phenomenal stuff. He's doing like Bob Gibson in 67, 68, Tom Seaver, 73. I mean, he's doing some of this all-time great stuff. And you can't run around, I'll just say this, and strike out 15, 16 times. You need men on base. Get somebody on base, get them over. It could be a one or two run game. So you've got to at least get someone on, advance them, get them in. Can't go for the home run all the time. That's my opinion.
Dave, do you see this as a classic contrast of styles? The Yankees are a slugging team, hit a lot of home runs. The Astros beat you with pitching and pretty much play a lot of small ball.
Yeah, I'll say it's a great contrast, you know, just as like you have Aaron Judge in one end and Jose Altuve on the other, you know, the smallest and the largest people in the game. But both of them play extremely good baseball. Both teams are loose. Both teams are experienced. A lot of good pitching, a lot of good hitting. I mean, for someone, this is a series to watch. This is the series to watch. I really can't tell you who's going to come out on top. Even though I played for the Yankees, I'm in New York, I don't think they're a clear-cut favorite.
You know. Well, you've spent a lot of some of your time up in the Bronx with the long sleeve jersey underneath the uniform, playing those fall baseball games. What are some of your best memories of playing baseball with the Yankees?
Man, it's just, you know, although we won more games than anyone in the 80s, we didn't win at all. All I can say is it's great competition every day. You come to work. You get your uniform dirty, play hard, the people love you. So we accomplished a lot, and I mean, I will always have great memories of having played for this organization. Even when you travel, you know, it's kind of like the Rolling Stones going somewhere. Everybody comes. And then when you're on the road, they either love you or hate you. They don't just dismiss you, you know.
And the leader of the pack was the boss, George Steinbrenner. Can you give us one of your favorite stories?
No. No, I want to have a good day.
We appreciate that. We appreciate that.
I don't mind you asking. I'll skip it, you know.
Well, something tells me when you're up in the Bronx tonight, you might get recognized. You might get a little bit of love up there.
No, we're good. I appreciate they brought me here to New York.
It's great. Well, that's not the only series still active, but it does feel like the only series still active after the Nationals dominated the Cardinals in yet another game. Is this series over between the Nats and the Cards?
I don't want to just outright say it is, but I think maybe only one team has ever come back from a 0-3 deficit. I think that was Boston over the Yankees or whatever. So when you're down 0-3, you know, or 3-0, it's a difficult, big hill to climb.
So we have a segment called Behind the Curtain where we talk to athletes and they take us behind the curtain about what life is really like. If you are in the Nationals position right now, take us behind the curtain. Do you want that sweep so you can get all that rest? Or is there something that's not great about that because you lose a little bit of the momentum you've built in the postseason?
You want to win every game, not only just for the rest. You don't want to give anyone a chance to breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be like a python. You're wrapped around them, and they let out the air, get tighter on them. You know, just step on the throat. That's what you do because, you know how it happens. You know, they get one game, then two. Then all of a sudden the pressure's on you, and it's tied up, and then it's a flip of a coin. And Jalen, you can say you don't want to give anybody a chance to breathe, do you?
Not at all. And speaking of chances to breathe, now, you know us diehard Michiganders, how we feel about our beloved Detroit Tigers. What does it say to me when I watch the Yankees, the Nationals, I watch the Astros, and I see ace pitchers all performing for those teams that were on our staff just a couple of years ago?
Yeah, you're right. You know, every team goes through that clean house. Let's start all over again. And you're right. Detroit had, you know, Verlander and Scherzer and, you know, a lot of guys, but you can't hold on to everybody. Your window of time to win is small. And, you know, Detroit, I don't really think they didn't try to. It's hard to say they didn't try, but they didn't have a chance when the season started. They really didn't. And it's tough to watch those kind of games. And then you're sitting back, like you say, man, that was our pitcher.
Who's our guy? You can say that almost every night in this postseason. Yeah. And, you know, I think you could find one of those on the Nats staff. If you look at the Nats staff and what they've done in this postseason, especially just absolutely shutting down the Cardinals in this series, Scherzer, Strasburg, and Sanchez, it's 9 starts, 1.4 ERA, 0.8 whip, and just the numbers are great. I guess my question for you is this. It's a hard question. Between the Yankees and the Astros and the Nats, which staff do you think is best suited for a World Series run? It's hard.
But Houston and the Nats,
mm-hmm.
they have pretty good pitching.
Yeah.
Houston probably first, you know, but again, short playoff, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. What about how the Nationals are performing when you lose a top flight talent like a Bryce Harper to Philadelphia?
Obviously, they didn't miss him this year. Bryce got what, you know, he got the price tag that he was looking for. He went to a new team. I thought Phillies had a better chance to perform, but they didn't. They came up short. The Nats just put it together. They almost dug a hole and buried themselves early in the season down. I think they were 12 games under 500. Manager was on the hot seat. I give them credit. They turned it around. And, you know, even against L.A., you know, I'm sitting there in L.A. and they had won 106, 107 games and they were probably the favorite. But anything can happen in the playoffs. You saw it.
Jalen rarely prepares for this show. But because you were coming on the show, it's always good. He's not prepared. We don't want to change what we got going on. But he knew you were coming on, and he did some research about when you were drafted, Jalen.
Absolutely. So people know you as a Hall of Fame baseball player, rightfully so. But can you acknowledge for the fans how terrific you were at multiple sports and actually got drafted in a couple?
Well, I'll just say that, yeah, it happened out of college where I was drafted by baseball, you know, Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. NFL, Minnesota mm-hmm. Vikings, and then the Atlanta Hawks and Utah Stars. I love basketball, you know, Big Ten basketball, Jalen. You know we've been,
yes,
you know,
indeed.
Up there. You know, we were able to, you know, we were one of the few teams to at Minnesota. This is before Kevin McHale and before the guys to win the Big Ten outright, first time in 50 some years. And I enjoyed the heck out of basketball, but my focus was pretty much always on baseball. But had they said, we're not going to pay you very much, I said, I'm going to go play basketball. So but I did my first choice. I was fortunate, blessed, stayed healthy, 22 years. Now, Jalen, you had a long career, but did anybody play 22 years in basketball?
From 73 to 95.
Is the only guy that comes to mind. What's the secret to that type of longevity? What's the secret to that type of longevity?
Wow. A combination of you got to find a way to stay healthy, got to try to find a way to stay motivated. You know, I always had a reason to be motivated every day to do well. And, I don't want to tick off of the list, but it was always to get respect to my teammates. It was to win. It was to position myself for a contract, to position myself for a trade, want people to remember you. I could go on and on. There was always a reason to play hard. And, you know, I'm going to say one thing about players today, and you see a lot of injuries in baseball in particular. Sometimes guys are caught up too much into, I have to try to be the, every part of their body has to push the envelope. Mm. You know, they're trying to be superhuman in every aspect. You know, the shoulder should be this size. You should run this quickly. And it's not baseball shape. And then guys are getting hurt. There's more injuries now because they're in the gym every day. That's no good.
That's a really good point. You are also here for health reasons as well. You've been working with Myeloma MVP. What is that organization and why are you so passionate about it?
Well, Amgen has put together a campaign really to combat myeloma. Myeloma is an insidious, it's a blood cancer, and it's a very tough opponent. And a lot of people in the baseball family, starting with my friend Don Baylor of so many years, he was diagnosed with it. He battled it for about 14 years. So I was able to team up with Amgen, and there is a campaign going on. And I'll tell you this. Go to the website first so I don't miss this. It's myeloma, explained.com, and there they can download a guide that will help you in three different areas, help you build your team and your and a plan with your doctor and have some goals and objectives, because many people obtain this, or they have the disease and they don't know which way to go. They don't know who to speak to. So Amgen has done an incredible job helping people understand the disease while they're trying to find ways to cure it. And in the meantime, myself, Don Baylor Jr., and another ESPN gentleman, Rod Gilmore, he's a broadcaster out there on the West Coast, great brother. He was diagnosed with the disease, and so we're out fanning out around New York over the next couple of days, making people know about this particular program and the campaign, and we're just educating people. So I appreciate even the time today to allow us to be able to talk about it.
Oh, of course. And while we will always appreciate and celebrate the work you've done on the field, work like this is even more important to us. Thank you so much for the time. Anytime you want to come by and talk about anything, you're always welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. The environment is very important. You know, I've got three little children, and they're learning about just how important plants are to the environment, because plants capture CO2. What if we could also help industrial plants capture CO2 too? Think how we could help lower emissions. More and more scientists think carbon capture is the key to reducing CO2 emissions globally. It's just one way that ExxonMobil is helping industrial plants be more like plants. That's the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. The Jalen and Jacoby podcast is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven. Jalen, there was a basketball game between the Warriors and the Lakers last night. And Steph Curry, he did fine. You know what I mean? He didn't play his best. He had 17 points, 6 for 17 shooting. But it was Steve Kerr, his coach, before the game, who said that he is now at his peak mentally and physically. Do you think this is peak Steph Curry?
I believe Steve Kerr is exactly right. Now, people sleep on the fact that he's the only unanimous MVP in the history of the NBA.
Shaq is so salty about it.
That has something to do with the voters, but it also has a lot to do with his productivity and how he played before Kevin Durant arrived, before Boogie Cousins arrived. Now Klay Thompson is going to miss at least half of the season. Mm-hmm. Steph Curry, the reason why we recognize him as the greatest shooter with range in multiple categories, off the catch, off the dribble, off screens, from beyond half court, people contest Steph Curry because there's a chance that it could go in. He's efficient, flirting with 50, 40, 90 consistently. He's going to be scoring the ball at such a high clip in such a short period of time. It's going to be fascinating to see him put up those numbers this season.
Potentially, it'll be another MVP campaign for Steph. But Jalen, I want to talk about rookies, and understandably so. The media, especially, is so laser-focused on Zion Williamson that they might be missing out on one of the best rookies. Tyler Hero of the Heat. Not only did he have 23 points last night, he had every single one of the Heat's first 14 points. Jalen, what do you see from Tyler that you like?
Those that watch this show already heard us have this conversation.
We've been on Tyler.
We were going to talk about Jimmy Butler, right? And I was like, let me tell y'all something. The kid from Kentucky, Tyler Hero, let's make sure we talk about him. Because he can do it in all facets. He's really athletic. You see him do the dribble handoff action. He can get it off the bounce. He has a quick release. And the Miami Heat do a terrific job of player development. Yep. So they're going to maximize his potential. He has an opportunity to have an amazing season. He will be a part of the Rookie of the Year conversation.
He really will. And he already has a step back of a veteran NBA player that's been around for 5 or 6 years. It's really impressive what we've seen from Hero. Remember where Hero was first celebrated on national stage. And there's also something else I wanted to bring up. We always talk about dynamic duos in the NBA. There's so many dynamic duos out there. You know them. We've seen them. We've been talking about them all summer. But there's one that's being slept on. A newly formed dynamic duo that people don't really talk about that much, and they're about to. Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. They don't really get discussed when it comes up to dynamic duos, but they're both young and they're both so talented, and they both can score from inside and outside. Look at this pick and roll from those two. Jalen, how much will we see the pick and roll from Luka and KP throughout the season?
So this is a modern day version of Steve Nash in Phoenix playing like an MVP, mm-hmm. and Dirk in Dallas also playing like an MVP that they broke up too early.
Okay.
So now you get both of these guys pre-prime. Okay, mm-hmm. they're still very young. Luka's only in his second year. And people sleep on how tall he is for his position. He's 6'7". Dribble, pass, and shoot. Toughness finishing at the basket. Clutch late in the game. And Kristaps Porzingis is not 7'1", 7'2". He is 7'3", with the ability to step behind the three-point line and effortlessly knock down threes. I've said this for the last handful of months. There are going to be like three or four players in the league this year that average 20 points and at least two blocks. He's going to be one of them. And they are a dynamic duo. Rick Carlisle is a terrific coach. He's also going to maximize their potential. The Dallas Mavs have something special moving forward with those two players.
They really, really do. I mean, it's easy. We in the media and as fans, like we have such a recency bias that we forget about just how good Kristaps Porzingis is. He can shoot 40% from three, and he can post up, and he's a rim protector. He plays defense. I'm so happy that he is healthy, and I want to see him and Luka Doncic team up. They're going to be one of my league pass teams. Jalen, I've also had my eye on some international basketball. Your soon-to-be adoptive brother, LaMelo Ball, has been playing pretty well while he's been overseas. In this previous game, he only had 9 points. He had five dimes, but he did it loudly. We remember that play. But he's really been doing his thing down there in Australia. Is he going to play his way into like a top three selection in the draft?
Absolutely. And his journey is so very unique that you would think just in a vacuum that players would be able to copy his role. But if you think back to his role, it was really long ago when he was a sophomore in high school scoring over 90 in the game. Mm. That was at least a handful of years ago. So he's been in California. He's been in Ohio.
Lithuania.
He's been overseas twice. Okay. So the infrastructure of his family dynamic allows that to happen. A dad that can travel, a brother that's in the league. So his situation now cultivated him to focus solely on being the best basketball player and maximizing his potential. So because of that, I do agree that he has what it takes to be a top pick like his brother was in the
NBA
draft.
I think so too. And I think as this season continues in Australia, you'll see him start to get talked about more, talked about more, talked about more, and climb in terms of draft stock.
Yep.
Jalen, yesterday we celebrated Simone Biles, who is now has more medals in the World Gymnastics Championships than anyone in history of women's gymnastics. This is a fact that was not lost on her, and she had the following to say, and I'm so here for it. Quote, "It's not out of cockiness. I've won 5 world titles, and if I say I'm the best gymnast there is, the reaction is, oh, she's cocky. Look at her now. No, the facts are literally on the paper. It's important to teach our female youth that it's okay to say, yes, I am good at this. And you don't hold back. You only see the men doing it and they're praised for it and the women are looked down upon for it." Jalen, if you literally have more accolades than anyone in the history of the sport, what is wrong with saying, you know what, I'm the best at this?
Well, I appreciate being a part of this program because we have range. We'll just talk about 5 teams and 10 players. We'll talk about topics like this because this is really important. And I want to do a distinction for everybody out there. She's saying that she's the GOAT because it's legitimate. There are so many mm-hmm. people out there that are talking about they're really good at something, but they ain't put in the work yet. So don't let that part of the quote go over people's head, that she can be young, she can be confident, she can be the best at what she do. And being a woman at doing that in a male-dominated sports industry, sometimes that is frowned upon. So I applaud her confidence, and I appreciate her productivity.
And you know what? I love the idea that she says, yes, I'm the best because it is on paper. But I like more is when she says, it's important that we teach young women to act this way. Because there is a gender inequity that she points out. Oh, if you're a female, all of a sudden you get called cocky. But if you're a male, you get praised for being confident. And I'm really glad that she's doing this and setting this example. Shout out to Simone Biles forever. Now, you talked about putting the work in, and as a professional athlete, you know this type of training and preparation and things that happen behind the scenes that we don't see that it takes to be at the top of your field, like LeBron James. Remember LeBron James when he was on a yacht this summer and he was still working out, you know, even though he's on a yacht, he's got his shirt off and there he is doing some band work and looks like the Mediterranean. He's got some tights on. This is Khabib. Khabib is swimming in a freezing river in France against the current. Jalen, which athlete's type of training looks more like something you would participate in?
First off, I would participate in what LeBron's doing because he really just standing on a boat doing a couple of curls.
That's it.
That ain't really his true workout. He just training a little bit. What Khabib is doing is physically getting it in to the point where it could be life or death. When you swimming against a current in the cold weather, like cold water like that, wow, that's intense.
Jalen, if you jumped in that water, I would already get my phone, not to help you, just to replace you, get a new co-host. Ladies, we need your phone calls.
Hey,
it
ladies!
Is Wednesday tomorrow. Wednesday, we take exclusively female voicemails, so we need to hear from you. Call 985-80-JALEN and leave us your voicemails. And if you give Reggie a shout-out, he'll put you on the show just like this.
Shout-out, Reggie the Ledge. It's your boy from up north, from America's Top Hat. So you guys talking about going number two and all that, but there's only two types of people in this world. There are people who wipe standing up, and there are people who wipe sitting down. I may have just blown your mind every time I bring this up. There's a fight that gets started. Let me know. Shout out Reg. Shout out my wife.
Okay. Paula. First of all, I always feel a little uncomfortable when we start talking about our poop topics. Jalen loves the poop topics. Jalen loves nothing more than the poop topics. And here's the thing, everybody poops. So might as well talk about it for a second. First of all, big shout to this dude in Minnesota. I believe that's America's Top Hat. I'm going to say something on a microphone that I have learned I'm pretty much alone on. And I'm not afraid to say it. Jalen, need your attention. When I take a number two, I stand up and wipe. I stand up and wipe. I am a standing wiper. I don't watch other people wipe. So I assume that this was a commonality amongst all human beings. I find it more efficient. I find it cleaner. I find it more effective. I've never done it any other way my whole entire life. Your thoughts, Mr. Rose?
That's a unique and interesting perspective.
I love that this guy didn't put his name on it either. Notice he didn't put his name?
I like all topics because we don't run from things on this very fine program for a national platform that's important to us. I'm talking about pooping. And so I'm not here to critique your wiping habits, but what I would say is I would have thought that you were in the minority by doing that had the caller not expressed that he does it as well.
No, I think that me and the caller are very much in minority. And I also feel like one thing I need to make very clear is the results are more important than the process. You know what I mean? The results are way more important than the process.
Well, here's the thing. So if you're standing, I just have to ask a couple of follow-up questions.
You know how I feel about follow-up questions, Mr. Rose.
Okay. One, the best number twos, you got to take both pants. You got to take your pants out of the leg. You got to take your leg out of the pants. Your knees have to be as far apart as possible. So
that's also, this is also tall guy problems. Tall guy, these things are not built for people over 6'3". This is a tall guy problem too. Not a lot of knee room, especially in public toilets. Come on now.
And so the reason why I expressed that it's important to take one of your legs out of your pants when you wipe, I guess that is what makes me feel like I don't need to stand up. So my follow-up question for you is, when you're taking a number two, do you keep both of your legs inside of your shorts or pants?
Yes.
You go. That's the issue.
Yes, I do. Yes, that's the issue.
So here's another question. It has to be extremely uncomfortable to stand up with both of your legs inside of your shorts and pants,
yep,
and wipe without stumbling or falling over.
Yep.
You have had to do that at some point in time. Whether you were inebriated, whether it was early in the morning, there had to be some time in your life where you fell over or stumbled while you were trying to commit that act. What are your thoughts?
I want to say this is I don't lie into microphones. I do not recall a single time I've stumbled or fallen over. I'm an elite athlete, Jalen. You're a professional basketball player. I'm a professional pooper. You know what I mean? Like, we all have different skill sets when it comes to athleticism. You know?
So
you're a great basketball player. I'm great at standing up and wiping.
So you're also a terrific husband and dad. So there are certain things that I do that I don't want my kids to do. So,
I love where you're going here.
Are your kids encouraged by you to do this, like you or like me?
So I think that most human beings revert back to sort of the most popular form of whatever they're up to. And I am so proud to say that all three of my kids are sit wipers. All three of them. I'm so happy. I was afraid that I would inflict. I've already inflicted Quincy with my big nipples. I was also afraid that I would inflict him with this other lifelong deficiency as a person. But he is a sitting wiper, and I'm so happy for him.
Seriously.
You know what I mean? I am so happy that he is.
Seriously.
And this is something that I've never said on the pod, obviously, because it's ridiculous and uncomfortable. But it's something that I've considered a lot while watching him do.
Seriously.
And we're putting it on wax.
Oh, man.
So here's the thing. You can always tell what Reg wants us to talk about by the voicemails he picks. We probably got 300 voicemails. And he's like, oh, no, this one's about pooping. Cool, I'll put that on the show. Let's listen to another voicemail. See if this is about pooping, too.
What up, though, Jalen and Jacoby? It's Big Mo calling from Ottawa, Canada this time. Shout out, Reg the Ledge. You know what? Matter of fact, I got a question for you, Reg the Ledge. As the senior Hall of Fame inductee expert, I got a Hall of Fame question for you. Kyle Lowry, my guy, Canada's guy, champion, five-time All-Star, All-NBA, 2016, go look it up, All-NBA. Reg, does he get into the Hall of Fame? Let me know what you think. Remember, Canada is listening. Yes or no?
First and foremost, these are the kind of topics that I really believe that Reg deserves a mic a couple of times a month.
Disagree, but that's fine.
So, Reg, because I know you got the board and you're like Terminator X used to be with people, with Public Enemy. You can speak to the people with your hands. So, Reg, I'm going to ask a couple of questions. Is Kyle Lowry a Hall of Famer?
Nope.
Do you think Kyle Lowry has ever been one of the top point guards in the NBA?
Nope.
Do you think that he will make another All-Star team?
Nope.
So that final question was a trick question. Because fan votes.
And also, the point guard position is not as deep as you think in the Eastern Conference.
Correct.
Reg?
John Wall is injured. So I want to give you, I'm going to tell people two positions that I want you to watch in the East. Two positions I want y'all to watch in the East this year. The point guard position and the power forward position. Both of those spots are proven grounds in the East. You're going to see some first-time All-Star level performers at those spots in the Eastern Conference. Terry Rozier has never been an All-Star. He falls into the...
First of all, why are the production staff yelling in our ear point guards in the East like we don't know?
Yeah.
Like, we don't talk about this every single day. I can tell you the backup point guards in the East.
Trae Young is going to be a perennial All-Star.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure I acknowledge something that's really important. And Kyle Lowry is my dog. So
shout out.
When you've done this for as long as I have, it ain't nothing personal. If you notice, I ain't on my social media account trolling athletes, trolling teams, trying to get likes, trying to get follows. creating a sideshow. I just say what I see. It's really important that we distinguish all-star level players that were really good from Hall of Fame players. To me, if you're in the Hall of Fame, you should have been perennially one of the top players in your league for a really long time. It shouldn't be any question.
You got to make All-NBA more than once. You got to make All-NBA more than once.
Like Steph Curry's a Hall of Fame.
No question.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Kevin Durant is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
No question.
Without question.
Russell Westbrook is trending to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I don't think Kyle Lowry falls into that category.
Nope.
Me neither. I want to thank all of our callers. Controversial call. I think that America's top hat is Minnesota,
what?
Not Canada. What? Because if you look at Minnesota down to Louisiana, it looks like a chef. And the hat part is Minnesota the chef. I could be wrong. Thank you to all of our international callers. Ladies, don't forget to call 985-80-JALEN. And make sure you leave us a voicemail. Because tomorrow's Wednesday. We need female voicemails.
We will not be tolerating any Canada slander on this program in any way, shape, or form.
No.
We'll be back tomorrow. Why is that, Caleb?
We're not done.
Got to give the people.
My little guys. I love them.
All I care about is my nipples. Seriously.